Are good. How's it going, man?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Have you been staying busy?
We've been trying. It's been kind of slow this year. It's definitely a bit slower than normal, and the weather really hasn't been helping, but we've been making it.
Yeah, I guess with like it not getting very cold, you probably weren't getting many calls with people's furnaces breaking down and whatnot from overworking.
Yeah, I mean that's basically it. If the temperatures don't really get down into the freezings, even people with issues, they don't really know they have issues. So like their units are short cycling or tripping on limit, but they don't run long enough to show those issues. So we just don't get the calls we would get if it's cold out.
Yeah, that's an issue I run into. I'm sure a lot of inspectors run into as well. Is like you get a short cycling unit and you note it in the report, and the homeowner has no idea that their furnace is just kicking on and off, all day essentially, because it's managing to like maintain a temperature that's okay for the people living there.
Yeah, I mean, even we get calls and we'll check on them and whatnot, but if the temperatures aren't in that range, like sometimes people have no idea, like you said. So it's like, well, how long has this been happening? And we go there and we're like, well, it's been happening, but we have no idea to know how long it's been happening. And sometimes people don't like to hear that because they're like, well, how do I know it's not going to keep doing it? And it's like, well, when it's not going to keep having those same issues. But if the temperatures aren't cold enough to know, it could be doing that for 6 months and it's been doing it for 6 months and you just have no idea.
Yeah. So I know like a dirty filter could be a cause of short cycling. What are like some other things that would cause a furnace to short cycle?
A couple different things. Obviously, a dirty filter, like lack of airflow. If your unit is oversized, it's going to short cycle a lot just because it's heating the space too quickly. So it's going to heat it up really fast and then it's going to cool down and then it's going to heat it up really fast again. Like, relatively, having a larger system is usually worse than having a smaller system to a degree. Especially like when it comes to air conditioning, because if you have those larger systems, they're not going to have the runtime they need to remove the moisture out of the air. So it may drop the temperature, but it's not going to drop the humidity level, and then you're not even that comfortable. I would say like things that you can obviously spot out there, like lack of insulation, leaking windows, leaking doors, that's going to cause short cycling. One funny story. We had this customer last year. We installed a brand new furnace and brand new AC in their house, actually two systems down in the city. And every time it would get below freezing outside, like we had a real cold week last year when it was like 0 degrees for a whole week. And they called us and they're like, hey, this unit can't keep up. Like it can't keep up. And we did load calculations and everything to ensure it was good before we installed it. So I went out there, and sure enough, it was like 60 degrees in the first level of the home. Well, I went to the basement, and the basement was 32 degrees. So I'm like,
Oh my God.
yeah, all this air is just dumping into the basement. And I tried telling them, like, hey, you got an air leakage issue. It's not with the systems. And they kept going back and forth. We did the load calculations. We sent them to them. I even told them, like, hey, if you want to have a third party company come out, have them come out. If it's the same thing I said, then we're in the same boat. If it's the different than what we said, we'll actually pay for their service call and diagnose further. But we never heard back from them after that. And then about 5 months ago, so I'd say it'd been installed for easily 8 months to a year. She called and she apologized to us because she's like, I'm so sorry for doubting you guys. We got the windows and the doors fixed, and our energy bills went way down. We never had this issue again. And it's just hard for us because it's like, I can put the best system in the world in your house, but if the house isn't up to par, then it's not going to work.
Yeah, I had an issue similar to that. It was like a early 1900s house, and the basement had a walkout basement, but it was literally like a shed or like a fence door. There were gaps between it to enter the basement, and it was like 30 degrees down there, and it's like the vents going up to the second floor had to have been like tiny because they had to. I think like it was definitely installed after the fact, like the house had already been built. And so they were like jammed in a tight space and there was like barely any airflow up there. So the only place you were comfortable was in the, on the main floor. But, something I run into a lot too is like, they'll have a, like a supply register, like 3 feet from the thermostat. So I'm sure that probably causes short cycling too.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's tricking it. Like in heat mode, really you want your thermostats close to a return out of direct sunlight, out of direct heat sources. Like you don't want them by your kitchen where there's the oven, the microwave, things that produce heat. You don't want them in direct sunlight. Direct sunlight can cause short cycling. Like you said, if that vent's blowing directly on it, because your air temperature out of your vent's anywhere from 100 to 140 degrees. So if it's 70 in your house, you're putting 130 degree air on it. It's going to raise that temperature really quick, shut off, and then think it's okay. But then as soon as the air starts mixing in the home, it's like, hey, it didn't heat the rest of the house. It was just falsely getting risen by the temperature coming out of that vent blowing on it.
Yeah. And I guess the opposite can happen too, where the thermostat's in a bad spot. Like, let's say it's like, let's say it's wintertime and it's like right next to a main entry door. And then in that situation, you're going to have your furnace, it's going to be running a lot more than it should, because anytime someone, even like just the air coming through like a gap in the door or something,
yeah,
it's going to cause the thermostat to think it's a lot colder than it is. And I see that a lot too. Like, right in the main entry area, the thermostat's like right there.
Yeah, as soon as you open that door, it gets hit with cold air, turns on, and then by the time it realizes, hey, it's not actually that cold in the house, it's already heated the house up. So now your house is hotter than you intend it to be, and that's when weird things can happen. We've even had issues with the thermostats in the wall, like if the wall is not insulated properly, or there's a space from like at the bottom of the stud plate, there's a hole in it. So like you're getting air from the basement or air from the attic up top. When we install a thermostat, we try to seal that hole where the wires go through, either with like insulation, silicone, thumb gum, whatever it may be. Cause sometimes just that little bit of air coming through those cavities can trick the thermostat. And that's what people don't realize a lot. Like your thermostat's just a switch. It's the same as a light switch. When the temperature's too cold or too hot, it turns on. Then when it satisfies, it shuts off. So a lot of people think they can keep turning it up and get more heat, or turn it down and get more AC, but it's switched on or it's switched off. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. So like, where are some like when you're setting up a brand new system, let's say in a house, like on a brand new house, do you get to decide where that thermostat goes, or is it that the builder tells you where to put it, or like a general area where they want it?
So it really depends. We don't do a ton of like new construction, like track homes, but we will do like custom homes. And whenever we do custom homes, that's a conversation I have with the homeowners and kind of explain to them like, hey, this is probably going to be the best spot for it. And we have different ways of going about it. Like, obviously, we want it in an open area. We want it close to a return, because that's where you're going to get the air going back into the system. So that's going to be an accurate temperature representation for most of the house. You want it out of the way of a supply, again, away from the kitchens, away from any areas. Like if they have a sauna or something, obviously we don't want to put a thermostat near that, because you're going to get that radiant heat from it. It just depends on like the layout of the house. Like we're doing a big custom home out in Wentzville, and they have two systems. We split the house like east and west because it's a big ranch, and we kind of went over with them like one side's all bedrooms. So we kind of want the thermostat in the hallway, because if we're to put it in one bedroom, now that one bedroom is going to kind of control the temperature of the other bedrooms. And if it's getting pounded by the sun, then it's going to be a lot warmer in that room than the other room. So depending on if you're in heat or cool, it's going to affect it. You have a question?
Yeah. So I see that a lot too on like new houses. Like today I did a McBride home. They have two units in the basement. One unit controls the main floor, one unit controls the second floor. they put the thermostat in the master bedroom. So, and I don't understand why they always do that. It's always in the bedroom, I've noticed. It's never like in the hallway on the second floor. But the issue is like you said, this master bedroom is facing, like, it's on the west side of the house. So, you know, during the summertime, it's going to be cooking that room. That room, especially if people, you know, keep doors closed or whatever, that room's going to be a lot hotter. And so you're going to freeze out the rest of the second floor because, you know, your thermostat thinks it's a lot hotter than it actually is in the house.
Yeah.
I think the craziest one I've seen, which I guess it wasn't really the HVAC guy's fault on placement, but they had a TV mounted on the wall and the thermostat was behind the TV.
Oh, geez.
And so you could guarantee, like, anytime that TV's on, it's going to make it seem like it's a lot hotter than it is. And it's going to change the, you know,
yeah, the way it works.
The house is heated and cooled. Yeah.
Yeah.
But is that something that you guys, like, do you spend a lot of time thinking about that? Cause it seems like some HVAC companies, when I'm running into these houses, is like, they don't even, like, where the thermostat goes isn't even like a thought in their head.
Yeah. And again, I don't know, cause I can't speak too much on new construction. That's kind of a different world. We mainly do residential repair and replacement, and that's where we're more focused on problems, where with new construction, they're kind of focused on getting it in. And so when we approach a system with new construction, we kind of look at it backwards, like, hey, what's going to cause an issue? Let's get rid of all that right off the bat. Let's mitigate that. And then, but yeah, we do put thought into it, because, like, I even, like, the custom home we're doing right now, we have it on a hall that is basically a hallway that opens up to the living area. And then on the other side of the wall is the master bedroom. So I told them, like, hey, we're going to put it in this hallway because I want it in the main living area. But if for some reason that doesn't seem to work the best, then we can spin it right around and put it in the master bedroom. But I don't like to put thermostats in the bedroom because, like you said, one bedroom is usually going to be hotter or colder than the other place. And what we do to mitigate that as an issue down the road is, like, because you can do all the calculations in the world and design the perfect system, but we all know it's not a perfect world. So you're going to have issues. Like, if the insulation's low, there's a leaking window, it's not as tight as we want it to be. So obviously we're going to design the system for a perfect scenario, but we're going to put things in there to mitigate problems if it's not a perfect scenario. So, like, in new construction, there's a lot of homes with one vent in each bedroom. If I'm doing a new construction home, I almost never put one vent in a bedroom because I know it's going to be an issue when it gets really hot or really cold. I'll throw an extra vent in the bedroom, and then we can balance the air using that extra vent. If it's too hot in the wintertime, we close the vent. If it's too hot in the summertime, we open the vent. But if there's no vent to be added, or if you're on a second floor and there's no way to get up there after the fact, then you have an issue. And that's where we go into a lot of homes that are two stories. It's always hotter on that second floor. So if you don't have two zones, there's going to be issues. And we have ways to fix that as well. It's just, it is aggravating because it's like, if they did their job properly from the get-go, then we wouldn't have to talk with customers about this, because a lot of people get in these homes after a few years and they're like, hey, it's always hot on the upstairs, the basement's finished, the drywall's all done. And it's like, well, I have solutions, but we're either going to open some walls up or we're going to have to add another system, and that's going to be expensive.
Yeah, and the issue I see with adding another system, because a lot of people do that after the fact, is they'll put it in the attic. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm just not a fan of an HVAC system being in the attic, especially here in the Midwest, because none of our attic spaces are conditioned.
No.
And when they do put it in there, they don't condition the attic space. So it's going to be 140 degrees up there in the summertime, and your unit's going to be working extra hard. And then, you know, it's going to be colder than typical in the wintertime. So, but what sucks about, like, some of this new construction, and I'll mention McBride again, just cause they're easy to pick on. like, having a second system is an upcharge, and it's a pretty big upcharge. And a lot of people don't want to do that. on a two story. You know, they want the countertops and the cabinets. They don't want to think about an extra system. And I mean, I'm at a point now where I've been in so many. I think it's necessary to have a second system.
Yeah, it's a necessity.
A lot of times too, it's like the blower isn't strong enough to even like put a decent amount of air up on the second floor. So you put your hand over the vent, and it's basically it's like radiant heat because there's like it's not even blowing enough to really.
Yeah, you're just barely feeling it, and that's another thing. It's like whenever you're on the second floor, like say the system's in the east wing of the house, and we're talking about a house on the second or a room on the second floor on the west wing of the house, it has to overcome all that distance plus the heat from upstairs. So it's like if you have a single zone system, then it's just not done properly. And I'd agree. It's a necessity to have two zones. Like I know personally, after being in the HVAC field, I would never purchase a home that was two levels and only have one zone, because that upstairs level is going to be consistently 9 to 10 degrees hotter than the lower level.
So if I'm going to pick your brain on this one, if you bought a house and let's say it only had one system that controlled the second main floor and second floor, would you zone the ducts, or would you put another system in? Would you do like a mini split where you have like just a couple different systems in the second floor bedrooms or something?
So it really depends on like what they're trying to accomplish, how long term it is, and the budget. Obviously, having a second system is probably always going to be the best solution in terms of control, because you have your own control. But zoning is a great solution to all. Like we've done a lot of zoning in this area because there are a lot of homes in this area that have one system, two levels, and they never put enough vents. So like when we build a house again, I'm trying to put more vents on the second floor than the first floor, because you're getting that increased load from the heat rising plus the standard load from the house being like, if you have an 800 square foot house or a 1600 square foot house, 800 square feet on the first level, 800 square feet on the second level, your second level system is going to need to be bigger than the first just to overcome the heat rise, the stack effect. But zoning's a great solution. Like if they only have one room upstairs, that's a problem. A one-headed mini split would be a great solution, cost effective, and you get the remote control. You can control it from just that room. But if they're trying to do multiple rooms at once, typically zoning that one system into two is going to be a lot more cost effective than adding a mini split to each room. Because when you start to get into 3-4 head mini split systems, they can be pretty pricey, just on par with like what a complete HVAC system would be.
So, because there might be some people listening that are like, what we're saying is over their head. Can you explain zoning and explain mini splits? So that people can really get an idea.
Yeah. And I'll give myself a little shameless plug on our website, staycool-hvac.com. We have a lot of blogs I've been working on. We actually just put out a zoning one last week, so there's more in-depth information. But in terms of zoning, it's really just basically how many thermostats do you have. Like if you have one thermostat in your home, you have one zone. If you have two thermostats in your home, you have two zones. If you have three thermostats in your home, you have three zones. And those zones can be broken up a few different ways. You can obviously have what we call a one-to-one zone, where you have one thermostat, one complete HVAC system. And then you can also have like two-in-one zones, where you have one HVAC system and two thermostats. And that's kind of what we do when, like, say the McBride home, for instance, it's always hot on the second level. I had a customer actually about this time last year reached out to me. It's a funny story because he recently got married. So he'd been in that house for about 12 years and it's always been hot. Master bedroom on the second floor, all the kids' bedrooms on the second floor. The downstairs is mainly just kitchen, living, dining room, and laundry and stuff. So he called me. He's like, "Hey man, my wife's telling me we either have to move or I have to fix this." So he was in a tight spot, and unfortunately, his basement was already finished, so we had to remove some drywall, but we turned his one system into two zones. And what that does is we add another thermostat to the upper level, And so when it's hot upstairs, that thermostat tells the system downstairs it needs to turn on. And then we put zone dampers in all the individual duct runs, like all the vents that actually go from the system to the living space. We'll damper every single vent. So whenever the upstairs system is calling for cooling, it's going to close all the vents on the first floor and then only send air to that second level. Now, there are cases where if the system's bigger than the allotted vents we have, it has to get rid of that air somewhere. So we may have to use like a bypass zone or like dump some air in the basement somewhere where it's not going to matter, so the system still works properly, because we don't want to restrict the airflow. But basically, in order to zone it, we break the ductwork into two or three sections, sometimes even four, and add a thermostat for each additional zone. And so that whenever just that zone calls, it can close all the other vents in the house, open the zones just for that one, and then it does an efficient job of cooling or heating. And if the other zone calls at the same time, it's just going to open those vents as well. So it can run all zones. Like on a really hot day, it may run the upper level zone more, but it can still open the lower levels and cool the whole house or heat the whole house like it did before.
So on those dampers, can they be programmed to like open just part of the way and sit, or is it just full open, full close?
I'm sure there's some out there that can be programmed to only open part of the way. I haven't ran into them or had a need to quite yet. You can do, like, they have manual dampers where you can do that as well. Usually, when we do the dampers, we're using pneumatic dampers, so they run off air. They have a lifetime warranty just because the pneumatics, so there's nothing electrical inside them. So they have a lot less chance of breaking down. I'm sure with like an electrical damper, you can set like your motor to only go 75% or 50%. That would probably have to be in like some sort of controls. I've actually seen like if sometimes if they're wired in series instead of parallel, it'll open the first one like all the way, and the second one a little less than all the way because it's losing power down the line. Someone didn't
Gotcha.
wire it right. But I'm sure that can be done. If it, and that's the thing, like if it's installed and it's designed properly, you don't really run into that. But most of the time when we're doing the zoning, it's because someone didn't design it properly.
Right. So with the pneumatic zoning, because I hadn't heard of that. I always just thought they were all electric. So I guess I need to look into how to tell the difference. But is it just using air from the blower?
No, so it
Or
has.
is it a compressor of some kind?
It uses with it's a zone panel. It's called a we normally use Arzel zoning with like a heat pump pro panel. So it's basically a panel you mount on the wall next to the system, and that becomes kind of like the new interface. So then you run your thermostat wires and your furnace wires to that panel, and it kind of controls everything. Inside that panel's a pump. So they're normally open basically when there's no power or no air going to them. It's not sucking. They're going to stay open. So in the case of a failure, they're going to fail open, not fail closed.
That's
That's
good.
yeah, you never want them to fail closed. That can cause all kinds of issues. But basically, the pump will just start pulling a vacuum on it, and as it pulls a vacuum, it'll just slowly close that damper. And so it's just an air pump. And the pneumatic ones, they'll what?
Is it noisy or is it pretty like a pretty quiet
It's pretty
whole thing?
quiet. It is like a slight like hum, like a and depending on how it's mounted and where it's mounted, it could transmit some noise. What we do to mitigate that is we'll actually mount. So we'll put the zone panel on a piece of plywood, but before we put it on the plywood, we'll wrap the plywood in bubble wrap insulation, like that shiny silver insulation. So we'll wrap the
Yeah.
panel in that. It makes it look kind of nice and flashy too. And then we'll put that panel on the wall, and then put the zone panel on that insulated piece of wood that we put up there. So there's kind of a barrier between the wood and the wall, and then a barrier between the wood and the pump, and it helps mitigate the noise. But you definitely want to take into account, like, they don't want to met it or mounted on metal. They don't want to mount it in certain spots because you can get that vibration through the house.
Yeah. So with zoning, when you have to do it like on a second floor, like install another thermostat on the second floor, is that hard for you guys to run wire down to like the basement or wherever the furnace is?
Sometimes, so the one case I
Like
was.
how do you do that? Or like where are you running the wire?
So we can do it a couple different ways, and again, it all comes down to design and like what the customer wants out of it. We're really customer oriented when we do our estimates. Like I ask a lot of questions, like, hey, how would you think about the thermostat here or here? And here's what it's going to do differently in both spots. I like to educate people in order to make a decision, so they kind of know like the logistics behind it. Because sometimes you have returns that go through the walls all the way on the second floor. So like
Oh.
if your first floor wall and your second floor wall are lined up, and I can put the thermostat in that return, we could potentially poke into that return, drop a wire all the way down to the basement and pull it in. And it's a low voltage control, so it's not a big deal if it's in a return cavity. They don't want like high voltage in returns for fire reasons and stuff like that. That's like the easiest way to get it down. They do make Wi-Fi thermostats that can, so like it'll have a little hub down in the furnace, and then the thermostat upstairs will be controlled by wirelessly. Now, I don't know, like I don't really like wireless just because if you lose that connection, then that's an issue I can't solve. It's just an internet connectivity issue, and it may affect your comfort. So I try to mitigate that by running hard wires. Typically, if they don't have a return, like the one house that we recently did, we went down the wall. So we poked a hole in the upstairs wall to start feeding wire, and then I had to cut a hole down by the base plate, like where the trim is. I cut one hole in the drywall about 6 inches, 6 by 6. I was able to get my drill in there, drill a pilot through the top plate of the first floor. And then once we get into the first floor, we have to cut one hole up top in order to get to wire, and then usually another hole. Sometimes we can do it where we like drill through the basement, run a fish tape, but usually we have to cut a hole up top and a hole down low on the wall on each level just to grab our wire and keep feeding it through. Sometimes we refer to electricians for running stuff like that if it gets like really crazy, but we're comfortable running low voltage wires. Again, it really just depends, like, does the customer want to open the walls up, or are they already opening the walls up? Like if they're already doing remodel jobs where they need drywall work, then it's no big deal to patch up a few small holes. So we're going to run the wire. If they're like, hey, there's no way to get in my walls, I don't want the walls open, we can do wireless, or we can try to put it down with a return. That's an option. Like we're doing a mini split next week. Same deal. The people have two levels, one zone. It's always hot in the upstairs. They have a newborn baby. They w don't want it to be hot. So what we're going to do, and hopefully it's going to work, we don't really know until we get into it. We're going to try to feed our line set through the return from the basement all the way up both walls. And then we can put our mini split right outside of that return so we don't have to cut any invasive holes in there. But the only thing we're unsure about is there can't be any blockers between the first and the second level, which if it's a good return, there shouldn't be. And then we'll just get rid of that return on the second level because they'll have a mini split in that room, and we'll move the return if we need to, but it shouldn't have any issues.
Gotcha. So in terms of I guess running ductwork and then returns, a lot of houses I see, I guess they're a little bit older. Sometimes they'll only have like a return in the living room, like a return in the hallway, but the individual bedrooms won't have returns. And then obviously I run into houses that don't even have a return. Like one I did yesterday, it's just a filter on the return, like there's no return ductwork or anything. It's just a filter up against the unit. How much does that matter in your opinion in terms of like having returns in each room or just maybe one on each level or what's like the best
So
way to go about it?
nowadays the systems are designed pretty well most of the time. depending on who did it and what the costs. Oh, the new construction, they love to cut the costs, so it's like they reduce the costs any way they can, which is crazy to me. Like you said, people want to spend the money on the kitchens and bathrooms, but it's like, hey, this machine keeps you comfortable every single day. But that's a whole, we could have a whole podcast on that subject. But as far as the return goes, like obviously you want to return in every bedroom. The easiest way for me to explain it is like a balloon. When you fill a balloon with air, it's full of air. So if that balloon's at capacity, let's say it's 100% full of air before it pops, you can't put any more air into that. Now, if you get air out of the balloon, then you can put more air into it. So I like to think of like a sealed room, the same as a balloon. Once you run out of air and you start positively pressurizing that room, it's either going to seep through the cracks, it's going to go outside, it's going to go in the attic, go in the crawl space, wherever, or it's going to start not allowing more supply air in because that pressure is going to be more, so it's going to flow to the path of least resistance. So I consider the return the relief. So basically, if you don't have the return, your room's going to fill up with air and it has nowhere to cycle that air. If you have a return in every bedroom, it's going to push the air through the room, suck the air out, and then give it more air to cycle constantly. Ideally, like in newer homes, you want your supplies down low and your returns up high. The heat's going to rise, so the return's going to pull that hot air and then replace it with cooler air. And typically, you're going to have more issues in the cooling season than you will in the heating season, at least in our region, just because the summers are a lot less mild than the winters. But really, you want to return in every bedroom. Again, you don't want returns in bathrooms or kitchens for smell reasons. You don't want to be sucking that back in.
Well, probably like humidity reasons too, I would guess. Like, you don't really want a lot of humidity. I don't know. I mean, because that humidity affects temperature a lot, but it also can cause issues on ductwork and like condensation and stuff like that. And if you got somebody taking like a hot shower and the unit's running and it's pulling in all that hot air, that hot moist air, like I'm sure that could cause issues with a bunch of stuff.
That could definitely cause issues with like rust buildup. Your motors aren't going to last as long. We see a lot like with powered humidifiers. So like there's three different types of humidifiers. There's a bypass humidifier that uses the air through the system to pass like a water panel. There's a powered humidifier that uses a fan on the back of it. And then there's a steam humidifier. And with the powered humidifiers, they can run independently of the system, but it's putting usually a cold, damp air into that duct system. So if it's running and the furnace isn't on, it's putting like, let's say, I don't know, 70-degree air that's cold, filled with water straight onto the metal. So there's a chance it could start rusting. And if your blower speed's not high enough during that process, it's not going to push that air like it needs to. So I see a lot of the times, like when people have powered humidifiers, it's always rusted out right in front of that humidifier on the ductwork. We don't even really sell the powered humidifiers because, like I said, 9 times out of 10, it's rusted out. And I'm like, I don't want to sell you something that's going to rust it out. The bypass doesn't have that issue because it's only going to run when the system's running. So it has to have that hot air from the furnace or enough blower speed. And you can also do like a steam humidifier. And with the steam, you just have to make sure your blower speed's set high enough. Actually, at our office, we have a steam humidifier, and we need to adjust our blower speed right now because sometimes we just change the system out and we've been kind of messing with it, trying different scenarios, testing it. And if our blower speed's too low, it'll actually output like steam. All of our vents are up top. So if it's running just that humidifier with our really low blower speed, it'll start putting like water vapor out of the vents where you can actually see it. It looks like all the vents are smoking, and then sometimes they'll start condensating just because it doesn't have enough air speed to push it out.
Humidifiers make me nervous. I tell people, like, because you never know, like, especially people buying a used house that has a humidifier, you never know how they used it or how they took care of it. because they can be a breeding ground for mold a lot of times, can't they?
Oh yeah, for sure.
I guess depending on if they were ever serviced or what. And then you get people that forget to turn them off in the summertime, and then it's like, you know, just extra humidity everywhere, essentially. But yet, I feel like, I guess they're good. They can be good in the wintertime, and they can be good if they're used properly. But I feel like a lot of times they're not used the way they should be.
Yeah, there's definitely, and that's the thing. It's like with HVAC systems in general, like they require maintenance, and people try to skip that part. And there, especially with the newer units, like there's units out there that if you don't change the filter for the first 8 months to a year, you could potentially ruin that system because that motor is going to overheat. And that's like the number one killer of all motors is heat. So you don't change the filter, the motor overheats. Now the motor's not working properly. Same with the humidifiers. If you don't change that pad, now you have a pad that's saturated with liquid sitting in there all the time. It's going to grow something on there. So it's never good. And what I tell people is I like to change the pads in the humidifiers. I like to do all my humidifier maintenance at the end of winter, which is actually kind of the opposite of most people, because if I change the pad at the end of winter, I know it's good all through summer and I know it's ready to go next winter. If we change it at the beginning of winter, it's going to be good during winter, but then that pad's going to start to get buildup on it. And now you have that pad sitting in there all summer long, just for no reason. It's all dirty and it's all nasty. And yeah, if they're not maintained, they can cause more issues than just humidity as well.
So how often do you recommend maintenance on a unit? And like, I know you guys do it like a maintenance, like a seasonal maintenance thing. So yeah, if you guys listening and any of you are in St. Louis, you can call Stay Cool to come service your stuff. But do you guys do like spring and fall, or what do you usually recommend people do?
So we recommend twice a year. Now, obviously like spring and fall is going to be the best, but it really doesn't matter. As long as it's maintenance once a year, it's going to get the maintenance it needs. We'll usually do our air conditioner maintenance and our tune-ups right before it gets warm, make sure everything's working properly. The air conditioner is a lot bigger deal than the furnace because the air conditioner is constantly under pressure. So when you have a unit just sitting there in 100-degree heat, it could have pressure anywhere near like 250, 300 PSI just sitting inside the unit. When it kicks on, if it's really dirty, your pressure could go all the way up to 500 or 600 on the high side. So if that unit's not cleaned continuously, you're going to double the pressures of the unit. You're going to double the stress on it, double the heat on it. It's not going to last as long, and it's not going to be efficient. I actually did it's on our YouTube. I did a study basically on an old AC. I took my amp meter and measured the amp draw of the air conditioning unit before and after I cleaned it. Before I cleaned it, it was pulling about 16 amps under full running capacity. And people that know electricity, that's directly the amp draw on your home is what you pay for from the power company. So if your amp draw is higher, your energy bills are going to be higher. After I cleaned that unit, it dropped the amps it started off around like 7. Once it got dried off, it was closer to 9. So it almost dropped it in half just from cleaning that unit off. And that's going to affect your energy bills, like I said, but also the life of your unit. If it's at 600 PSI on the high side all the time, it's not going to last very long.
And I feel like, and I don't know if it's the way that they're made nowadays, because you get that the people always say, you know, they don't make them like they used to. But like, so the house I did yesterday, for example, it was a Rheem unit. It was from 1983 and it was still working.
Yeah.
But nowadays I feel like, and I don't want to throw like a company name under the bus or anything, but some of these units, I mean, people might only get like 7 or 8 years out of them. And I'll put in my report, like if it's anywhere between, if it's 8+ years old, I'll tell people like, hey, this is kind of getting up there. Like, make sure you have it maintained regularly because, you know, there could be something come up where it needs something replaced. Like I had my old house had a new system installed in 2015, and the summer of 2020, already had an issue, and like I kept good care of it. I made sure everything was clean with it and everything. But it's just like sometimes it's just, you know, I don't know if it's like the cheaper brands or what it is, but I feel like they don't. The exterior unit is not lasting as long as you would think they should.
Yeah, and I mean, part of it I think is planned obsolescence, like 10-year part warranties are what they've given you. So sometimes I it's like as soon as they get out that warranty, they start making noise, and it's like, okay, that I don't know.
Yeah,
it's got to be.
That's planned. Exactly what happened to mine, because it had a 5-year, and it was literally like 5 years and 4 months.
Yep.
And it had and I ended up, I was like trying to sell my house, and I had a showing that day, and the AC wasn't working, and this was August.
Oh, geez.
So I was like, yeah, and it ended up costing me $1,300 to get it fixed. But yeah, it's,
well,
they time them.
And that's part of the problem too. Like they switched from R22 refrigerant to 410A refrigerant. R22 had a high side working pressure around like 200 to 225. 410A is anywhere from 275 to 375, 400. So it's almost double the working pressure of the old refrigerant. Whenever they switch refrigerants, back in the day, 30 years ago, and again, I wasn't even alive back then, so I can't speak too much, but they use thicker copper, and you can physically see it and feel it. Like when you scrap an old coil versus a new coil, it's a lot heavier on that old coil. So the copper's thicker, the pressures are lower. On the new refrigerant, the pressures are higher, the copper's thinner, and they're also switching to a lot of aluminum for better heat transfer. So they want them to be more efficient, but at what cost? And so now we have higher pressures in a thinner, weaker metal, and it's going to have more problems. And that's kind of the nature of it. Like right now, they're coils called microchannel coils. They're similar to like a radiator where it's more of a flat channel than like a tube channel. And I'm not a big believer in those at all. Like I don't like them because first of all, they're 100% aluminum, which is harder to repair. We've repaired them in the past and we've repaired them successfully. But like one micro channel that I was working on last summer, for instance, it had a leak. And I told the guy, I was like, I can solder it. I can fix the leak. But the only thing is I can't guarantee it's not going to cause any more leaks. And that particular manufacturer had like these cinch points on the coil where it was put together. So there's little brackets on the coil. And I took the one bracket apart and that's where it was leaking. So we soldered it up and then I pressurized it and it started leaking again about 4 inches below where I soldered it because it got hot, popped the leak. I did that 6 more times because it kept springing leaks. Finally, after the 6-1, it held pressure. We pumped it up to 400 PSI. It held pressure. And unfortunately, in a situation like that, we tell the customer, like, hey, we can't really do too much about warranty on this. I can warranty my specific solder joints, but there's nothing to say another leak won't spring up right next to it because we put heat everywhere on this coil. And it's just, I don't know, the world is different obviously now than it was 30 years ago. And I'll agree, like they aren't built how they used to be, like that old rude, you like we call those ones the green machines. They're the big green rectangles. Those things, yeah, they're monsters. Get some and they just don't die. And it's like, I don't know, obviously time will tell 20 years from now, but I don't think we're going to have too many 30-year-old air conditioners 30 years from now.
Right. Yeah. That thing was 1983. So it's 40 years old, but, I can attest to that thinner copper because that's what the issue was with mine. It like ended up developing like a small leak because the copper was so thin. And so he had to replace some stuff, but, I forget what all was entailed with it, but yeah. That I think that could definitely have something to do with some of the issues. It's just, they're using less materials and I guess.
Yeah. They're cutting costs.
So like back to the mini splits, cause we forgot to kind of touch on that. If I was going to build like a custom house, I think that would be what I would do. I would do probably some type of radiant floor heat in the basement. But I would like mini split everything so that every room had its own control. And plus it gets rid of duct work and it gets rid of that having to change filters and your duct work getting dirty. And I feel like if people with allergies, the mini split, well, radiant heat too, but like a mini split would probably help them more in terms of like, you know, you got dirty ducts that air's blowing through constantly and stuff like that. So if you could explain kind of what a mini split system is and how they're more beneficial, I guess, over a standard central unit that has duct work.
Okay. Yeah, mini split. So for those that don't know, it's basically a heat pump and it's a high efficiency heat pump. So what a heat pump is, you have an air conditioning unit and what its job is to do is remove the heat from inside your house and reject it outside. So you take your hot air from your living space, send it through the evaporator coil. It removes the heat. It sends the heat outside using the refrigerant lines in the outdoor unit. And then it's able to cool the house over and over. A heat pump basically reverses the flow of refrigerant in the wintertime so that it can remove heat from the outdoor temperature and push that heat into the home. And that uses all electric, so there's no gas involved with a heat pump typically. And so, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years ago, heat pumps weren't as popular as they are today because the temperature at which the heat pump can properly heat the house is a lot lower now on outdoor temperature than it used to be. Like, now you can see heat pumps like Mitsubishi makes a hyperheat heat pump that it'll maintain 100% capacity all the way down to like 5 degrees Fahrenheit. So before then, you start losing capacity as it gets colder outside because there's less heat in the air to push inside. But nowadays, the technology allows them to heat pretty well, even in those extreme climates. So mini splits are great for like room additions, garages, basements, or high energy efficiency or high energy efficient custom homes. Kind of like you were saying, typically they're going to be mounted on a indoor head, like an indoor wall mounted head. They're about 3 feet long, 1 foot tall, 1 foot out, and they're ductless. So they don't need any duct work. They have refrigerant lines that run to them, a communication cable, and a drain. Typically, we like to put them on exterior walls because then you can go straight out the house. It drains outside. If you have to make any adjustments or repairs in the future, you're not dealing with anything inside the wall. But there's a lot of different ways to do them because, like, mini splits, they come one-to-one where you'll have one outdoor unit and one indoor unit, but you can also get them 3-to-1, 5-to-1, 8-to-1, where you have 8 indoor heads on one outdoor unit that's a lot bigger and able to handle all those heads. The only issue comes into play, like sometimes it's actually cheaper to sell a customer multiple 1-to-1 systems than it is to install like a 4-to-1 or an 8-to-1. And even nowadays, like they have many split options that can be tied into ductwork. Like they have air handlers. So I can make a system that consists of a 4-to-1 where you have 3 indoor wall mounted heads, 1 air handler, and 1 outdoor unit. And that would be a 4-zone system for that home. They're also modulating compressors. So like most air conditioners are single stage, single speed. They're either on or they're off. So like in terms of size, if you have like a 3-ton air conditioner, for instance, it's either 0 or 3 tons. If you have a modulating compressor, it can run multiple different speeds between 0 and 3 tons, which gives you advanced dehumidification, temperature control, as well as efficiency.
And like, I feel like I see, I don't really do too many log cabins anymore, but when I was, I had a string there where I was doing like a bunch of them for some reason, but that was like a popular system that they would put in the log cabins was a mini splits. But like, it's a good thing for like a garage too, in my opinion. Like if you want to condition your garage, cause your garage is going to have an exterior wall, you can just mount it right on that exterior wall, and then you know, put the condenser outside, like right outside the wall, with hopefully you have space, you know, for it. But that'd be a good way to kind of keep your garage space conditioned.
Yeah,
and I know they sell units on Amazon, like do it yourself thing, basically. Uh-huh. And I read some of the reviews, and people, you know, people say it's not too hard. And so I thought about doing that, like buying just a small system and putting it in the garage just to keep it like keep it from being 30 degrees in the winter, like, and keep it mild. From being 100 degrees in the summer. Yeah, but I don't even think we mentioned, like, your company name is Stay Cool. You're out of O'Fallon here, which is where I'm out of. How's that wall coming? I saw you posted a picture of the wall you got.
Yeah, we're building the wall in our office right now to separate, like, our office area from our training and break area. It's coming together. We got drywall on there today. I think they're coming to do the mudding and taping tomorrow. Then we'll do some paint this weekend. But
how long were those studs? Were those like...
Those are 12 footers. We cut down to like 10 and a half, I think.
Oh, the wall looked longer. Like, it looked like it was 12 plus, or taller. It looked like it was 12 plus feet.
Yeah, I think I took it with the like super zoom. So it kind of like made it look a little strange. But gotcha. Yeah, that's our project for the week. It's going.
Is that going to be done in time for the Cinco de Mayo?
Yeah.
You're having?
Yeah, I'm hoping if they get it mudded and taped by Friday, I'll probably come in Saturday or Sunday and just paint it, get done with it. I don't like to leave projects lingering, especially ones that I know we need to finish quickly.
Yeah. Well, are you having somebody bring like cater tacos, or are you making them yourself?
We'll actually make them ourselves. So we'll have like pork, beef, chicken, basically like all you can eat, like taco bar kind of. We'll have all the different meats, and then your cheeses, lettuce, tomato, all that fun stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're looking forward
to
it.
I'll have to come to that. Yeah,
hopefully
like
it's nice this year. Last year it was kind of cold.
The beginning of May is always hit or miss. Like, you could get like a 50 to 40 degree day, or you could get like a 70 degree day.
Mm-hmm.
It's never consistent. But how long have you been doing this? How long have you been in the HVAC business?
That's a good question. So I'm 27 right now. I've been doing HVAC. I think I got into it when I was about 18, 19, so like right around 8 or 9 years. I'm a licensed journeyman in St. Louis County, St. Louis City, St. Charles County, St. Charles City, so pretty much anywhere in the metro area. Basically, I started off, I actually went to college for environmental and civil engineering. I've always been really good at math and science. So they were kind of, my whole family wanted me to go into engineering. After like a year, I was like, hey, I'm not doing this. This isn't for me. And then got into the local trade school, completed their program. It was like a 16-month program. And then I worked for a few smaller companies. And once I had the confidence to kind of do the jobs, quote the jobs, bid the jobs, get my licenses, then I decided I was going to take it on my own. And So I opened my first LLC in 2018, just because I knew I was eventually going to open the company, and I was doing some side work. So I wanted to make sure I had the proper insurance and proper licenses I needed in case something bad happened. That was kind of like, from the jump, I never wanted to do just non-legit work. I never wanted to get myself in that situation. And that actually benefited me quite a bit when it was time to come get my St. Louis license, because you had to show 3 years of active business. And although I didn't have a business, I did taxes and I paid myself a little bit. So I was able to go back to 2018 instead of like 2020 when I actually got my license. And that's where a lot of people with my age are like, how'd you get a license in St. Louis City so quickly? It takes X amount of years. And I kind of did it a different way than most people and found a way that worked for me. There's kind of, I don't want to call them loopholes because they're not really loopholes, but if you read the St. Louis mechanical code enough, you don't have to be an apprentice and you don't have to go through like a union. Like the way that I went down, like the path less traveled on, so to speak. Like I got all the documented work hours, took their test, kind of tested out, and then said they had to give me my license. Where most people go through like a 4 or 5 year apprenticeship program, I was in the apprenticeship program, but whenever I got my license, I wasn't even completed in that program because I kind of just tested my way out of everything.
Nice. So it sounds like you kind of, I don't want to say lucked into it, but you were smart enough to set something up before you actually went out on your own, and it ended up working out for you, benefiting you to where you could get your stuff earlier than a normal person would.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's where I kind of knew like off the jump I was gonna do it. So I was like, I might as well start getting all this in play. And it was funny because we actually, so the day we launched the company on social media and our website was the same day they announced the stay-at-home order for COVID in our area. And it couldn't have worked out better. And like, because most people are like, what, you launched your company during COVID? That's a terrible idea. But my hours were already going down for my regular job. So I was like, well, I'm already losing money, so to speak. I have my license ready. I have my insurance. I have my website. We had all that working in the back end. So when they announced that stay-at-home order, the first thing that came to my mind was everyone's on their phones. Everyone's on social media. Everyone's in their home. Now's the time to do it. And that's kind of like how that the taco program came about because the restaurants were struggling and whatnot. So we were trying to support them as well as come up with a cool referral program for our customers. So we're like, hey, I like tacos. Let's donate free tacos to local or to our customers from local Mexican restaurants.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I imagine with COVID, it like people being in their homes more, they're like, hey, my home's kind of like uncomfortable, or they're using their furnace and AC more, so they probably, business probably actually picked up, because that was kind of the case with inspections too, is like the 2 week stay at home order didn't apply to me because I was considered like an essential business. Which I'm sure the same for you. Like I would assume, that you guys were an essential business or whatever, but business just skyrocketed after that because people were realizing that they didn't like their home because they were having to stay in it more, and so they went out and, looked for a different home and ended up purchasing other, another home and selling their house. So, but the taco thing is funny because I met you, I guess it was, I guess it's been like a year ago,
Yeah, I think
maybe.
it's about a year.
But I implemented a free taco thing, and I was trying to, like, I was slow last winter, and I was looking for ways to, like, I guess upsell or like get people more interested in purchasing an inspection through me rather than some other company. And so I added a couple things, but I was like, I forget what I was doing, but I saw something with like free tacos, and I was like, that's a great idea. I'm like, I'm gonna reach out. So I reached out to like a local place in Illinois, he had, like, within the next day, he had these coupons made up for free tacos, and then I started using Las Marias, and getting gift certificates from them because that place is so good. It's if you're in the St. Louis area, it's in O'Fallon. It's at K and Veterans Memorial, but I don't want them to close,
Yeah.
so I'm like buying as many gift cards, and I go there like at least once a week to
Well,
eat.
they just opened, didn't they?
Yeah, it was like October or November, I think.
Okay, because I know there was a
They haven't been open
Mexican
very long.
restaurant like in there before. There's been a couple different things in that area, but yeah, we're pretty on top of the Mexican in this area, and that's what I saw that pop in, and I think I've been there like 7 times since we talked about it like 2 months
They
ago.
got really good food. Yeah, and you don't come out of there smelling bad. Like some places you go into, you come out and you smell like BO or onions, or I don't know what it is, but that place, you don't come out of there smelling bad. And like, I don't come out of there like miserable after I eat. It's like when I eat there, I like feel, I don't know if it's cleaner food or what, but I just feel a lot better after eating there. But yeah, it's, I think that's funny that, the whole taco thing. So how many employees do you have now? You've got, I know you got your brothers working for you, right?
Yeah. So I have three younger brothers. Two of them work with me. My brother Carter, he's my oldest brother. He's our general manager, business manager. And then my youngest brother Cole, he's 19 now. And, he's a field technician and installer. It's kind of funny because he's 19, but so I got into the industry, what I say, 7, 8 years ago, almost not, or 8, 9. And as soon as I started doing side work, so I mean, probably early 2018, maybe even a little bit before that, I was starting to bring Cole on jobs with me. So he was like 13, 14 years old. And I just have him start taking tools with me. So he's been in the field for about almost six years now or plus. I don't know the exact math of it, but it's funny because we got some young guys, but they're good for their age and their experience. Right now there's 8 of us total. There's me, my two brothers, my dad helps with sales. He's been doing sales his whole life, so he kind of always. He's been helping me get the whole thing going as well. He works two jobs right now, like his main job, and then also helps us when he can. And then we got three other guys we're training in the field and one other office employee we hired a few weeks ago. We're hoping in the next few months we're going to bring on at least one, maybe two more field employees and then possibly an office personnel. We're just trying to figure out the logistics of it because this winter has been super mild, and we don't like to say we're a weather dependent business. We like to say we're weather enhanced, but at the end of the day, we do depend on the weather to give us some sort of traction and calls. So it's been hard to grow these past few months, but kind of what me and my brother talk about all the time is like, if we can figure out how to be successful in this time, then when we have the weather on our side, we're going to be flourishing. And it's kind of like what everyone says, like the dark times are going to make you stronger and get through it. So we are kind of, I mean, obviously everyone's kind of on their toes right now with the economy and the state of everything that's been going on, but we're not really too worried about it. We're an essential business and people need us. So we're kind of like, we're ready for whatever at this point.
Yeah, everybody's always going to need HVAC company. So, but yeah, it's, I agree with you in terms of like just sticking it out and riding it out. The company's going to be that much better. Cause like with the inspection side of things, last year got slow for a lot of guys, and especially like, December, January, just this past December, January, and, Illinois. So Illinois is a licensed state, and they posted the stats for the amount of renewals because renewal period was in November. And it was like only 60. I think it was only 60% of inspectors renewed their license. So Illinois lost 40% of their inspectors. So it's like it's one of those things where like, you know, just if it gets slow, just ride it out. Don't quit kind of thing because, dude, I had 3 inspections in December, and I'm usually doing about 20. Ooh. So that just goes to show you how slow it was. But what I ended up doing is a buddy let me work as a contractor for him doing framing. So he's like been slammed with construction projects. So I started doing framing with him to fill in gaps. And then all of a sudden, mid-January, business just shot up. And like last month, February, that was my busiest February I've had in 6 years.
Really?
And this month has been pretty crazy with inspections too. So I don't know if people are just in the mood to buy now or if they're trying to get in before rates go up anymore or what. But definitely a good word of advice for people is like, just don't, when it gets tough, don't give up. Just keep pushing through because it'll get better. And it'll be worth it once you make it out the other side too. So
yeah, it just makes you stronger. That's where right now we have to come up with different ways to get jobs, different ways to market. And it's like, and like you said, I mean, there are people getting out of the industry that don't want to deal with this, and we can get more market share during these times as well. Like, not saying that the economy is going to get any worse. Hopefully it doesn't, but from a lot of what I've read and listened to, some of the best businessmen out there say that you can build your company faster than ever before during a recession because everyone else is backing on or backing off, and you just keep pushing forward.
Yeah. Well, and I see your yard signs everywhere, like going down the highway or wherever I'm at, I'll see them. Like I've seen a couple on Veterans Memorial. But yeah. Do you guys just throw those wherever, or do you have people that go out and put them up, or what?
Kind of, if we're like super slow, the guys are around the shop doing something, I'll send one of them out there with like 30-yard signs and say, "Hey, go put them wherever you can." Now, obviously the city doesn't really like that because you're supposed to have permits for them and they're only supposed to be out from Friday afternoon to Monday morning, but I don't know. We kind of got it in our marketing budget that we're going to put these out and we don't ever want them back. So we don't really care what happens to them. It was funny. I went to a boot camp training down in Texas back in December, and it was a business boot camp, and they really liked the yard signs. And so, like, one of the group's goals was like go back to the city and put out enough yard signs where they send you a letter. So that was kind of my mission the past couple months. And yeah, they sent the letter. It was funny though, because there was a building fire 2 buildings over from us a few weeks ago. Like Bill's Service Center caught on fire. I don't know if you saw that on the news or not, but
No.
yeah, it was crazy. It was like a big propane fire that was burning for like 5 or 6 hours. And
Oh,
I
geez.
knew. Yeah, it was wild. Well, it was funny because like normally I go to the gym in the afternoons, but I decided I was going to go to the gym that morning. And so it's 4:45 in the morning, or maybe it was, I don't know, it was right around 5 a.m. And I'm getting off the highway, and all I could see from the highway was this huge fire and this boom truck just blasting water on this fire. And then I got a phone call. And I'm like, I didn't see it ring. So it's a missed phone call from a random number, and it's 5 a.m. I'm like, who is calling me at 5 a.m.? And that's when I'm like, oh no, my building's on fire. So I've got over there. Luckily, thank God it wasn't us. I mean, still terrible for who was involved. But yeah, that was on fire. And then I forgot where I was even going with that. You asked.
The yard signs.
Oh, the yard signs. Yeah. So that day there was that fire, I put out like 8 yard signs in front of the shop because I knew that there was going to be heavy traffic from people looking at the fire, just like trying to figure out what happened. So we put all those yard signs out. The fire was on a Wednesday. By that Friday, we had a letter in our mailbox from the city saying we need to take our yard signs down in our front yard. And what's funny about that is that was in our front yard of our office. I've probably got 100 yard signs all through the city scattered. Well, at some point there was, and they've taken however many of them. Like one of the ladies actually went to one of my employees' house because he had 2 in his front yard, and she's like, "Hey, you need to take these out of your yard." And he took them out, but then she's like, "Tell your boss to come by my office and get the rest of his yard signs." And I was like, "Oh no, I'm." No, that sounds like
She like collecting them.
yeah, so they have a stack of our yard signs at their office, and
Jeez.
they said that I could come get them, but they're probably gonna hit me with a fine or something if I go in there.
Probably. Oh, Fallon's weird about yard signs, man. So I grew up in Illinois, just right across the river. And like I was in like kind of like the Alton Bethalto area, and there weren't any rule like people could you could have as many signs as you wanted in your yard. But like when I first moved over here, I put a sign for my business in my own yard, and like within 2 days, HOA mailed me a letter saying I can't have a sign in my yard. And it's like, man, there's like, yeah, O'Fallon's full of sign Nazis, so I don't really.
Oh yeah, they're well, the one day, so I have one in my yard that's been there forever, and they kind of know like I'm replacing it as soon as it's gone. And but in my neighborhood, one day I put one in front of the neighborhood. We did an install like down the street, and we put one in the customer's yard, which is perfectly okay. Like if it's in the customer's yard, it's not in an easement. They can keep it on in there as long as the HOA is okay with it. But we had 5 yard signs out in probably a quarter mile radius, like a super tight radius. And within 1 hour, all 5 of those signs were gone. And I was like, first of all, it's like $30, which whatever, it's marketing budget. But some, I'm like, what? How? There's no way that was O'Fallon. So I think, like you said, it was like a sign Nazi that's just going around stealing signs. So like, if I put one on the corner of where my neighborhood and Bryan Road meet, I can guarantee that sign's going to be gone within like an hour. So someone in that spot is just taking my signs, and that we just got a new fresh batch of 100 mailed to us the other day. So I'm gonna start deploying them again. But that's where it's kind of like I don't care. I'm like, whatever. It's we budget for what.
You need to set up like a trail cam or like hammer an anchor like 3 feet in the ground and like tie the two posts to
Concrete
it.
it in
So when
there.
they try to take it, they like can't yank it
Well, we were
out.
thinking about using a for $20, you can get an Apple AirTag. So I was thinking
Oh.
about spending $20. I mean, the cost of 4 signs is $20. So I've already lost 4 signs in that location. I'm thinking about putting the AirTag on it and figuring out where it goes to. And then once I know where it's at, then I'm gonna really start deploying. Just boom, boom, right in front of their house. And it's like, I don't know. When it comes to stuff like that, I'm kind of petty because it's like, hey, man, our phone number's on them. Everything's on them. Like, you can call us and say, hey, stop putting the signs out. But if they don't want to be adults about it, it's like, okay, this is when you steal 4 signs in one day, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, some people don't have anything better to do. I feel like they feel like they're here's the way I think of people like that is they to them they're doing a service and cleaning up their town and their neighborhood, but to everybody else they're just being a Karen
Oh
about
yeah.
it and just like complete waste of time going out there and taking signs and stuff. But yeah, that's funny though, because yeah, I've been seeing them all over the place. I'll just be driving and I'll see one in just some random spot.
We'll
But you know
try
what
to.
you should do though, and I've thought about this before. So where I'm like right at say 70 in Lake St. Louis Boulevard, and there's hot air balloons that are always flying around, and
Yeah.
sometimes they'll land in my neighborhood, like
I
in the
want one.
cul-de-sac. Dude, you should get a hot air balloon with like your taco guy
Dude,
and
so I've
everything.
actually looked into it. I don't, hot air balloons are expensive. If you didn't know, they're like, I think a new hot air balloon setup's anywhere from like 40 to 60 grand. Because, yeah, I've looked into it because I see them all the time. Like in the summertime, I want that big stay cool hot air balloon with the free tacos. Like that's gonna get impressions we want and need. What I'm trying to do eventually is, because I'm definitely not a pilot of a hot air balloon, maybe one day, but I'm gonna try to sponsor someone's balloon and see like, hey, if I split X amount on the cost of the balloon, you have the basket already. Because the basket's one of the most, like, I think the baskets are like 15, 20 grand, and then the balloon's
Oh.
X amount too. I don't know. It's been a while since I looked, but because I actually had that thought, like in the summer, there's 4 or 5 of them sometimes, and I'm like, whoa, like we could put that out there, and I know we would get calls on the ask about free tacos alone.
Right. Yeah, that'd be a good marketing tool, because I'm sure if, you know, them being that high up in the air, everybody's anytime like a hot air balloon is a rare thing for. But in this area, for some reason, there's a bunch of them. But
Yeah.
like, that's one of those things that if it's up in the air, everyone's gonna go look and, you know, see what's going on with it. So that'd be a good marketing tool. But yeah, man, I'm gonna let you get off here. We've been at it for over an hour.
Yeah.
But I appreciate your time. Where can people find you and reach you if they want to follow you or get a hold of you?
So yeah, we're on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Stay Cool Climate Control. And then our website is www.staycool-hvac.com. We have a YouTube page as well, Stay Cool Climate Control. That's part of the reason I was building that wall. We're going to do a lot more videos here soon. We've been on a mission to put out 50 blogs in 50 days. So
Oh.
yeah, we're really pumping the blogs out right now, and then once we finish those blogs, we're going to keep continuing with the blogs, but then we're going to attach a video to every single blog we make to give even more content, more information. We really like to educate people on the subject because, and that's kind of what we tell our guys, like, hey, we're the heating and cooling experts. Obviously, people need information to make an informed decision. But when we leave their house, we want them to know, like, hey, this guy provided more information than anyone else ever did. And now I'm able to make that decision better than with any other company because we truly care about the experience. And down the line, like you said, like with those new construction homes, it's like, I don't want to put systems in that are going to have issues down the line because that's my name, that's my reputation. It's just not something we want to do. But
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate your time. I'm sure people learned. I learned something. I didn't know there was pneumatic dampers for zone systems.
yeah, they're
So
pretty cool. I have, if you ever want to come by one time, I'll show you. We have a few at our shop that you can actually like blow air into and watch them open and close.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'll have to come by and check those out. All right, man. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. Have a good night.
All right, you too. See ya.
Thanks. Bye.